Welcome to AMI Sites, a podcast that offers you access to thought leaders who can help you expand your entrepreneurial toolbox. Learn from seasoned entrepreneurs who have already walked in your shoes and can help you with your day-to-day business decisions. With your host, AMI Kassar. AMI is the founder and CEO of Multifunding, an advisory company that helps you grow and stay in control of your business.
Hello and welcome. My name is AMI Kassar, founder and CEO of Multifunding. Since 2010, Multifunding has helped businesses achieve their biggest growth goals through creative and personalized funding solutions, working with hundreds of lenders across the nation. Joining us today is Bill Flynn. Bill is the CEO of Catalyst Growth Advisors. He has worked with, for, and advised hundreds of companies and has been a business advisor and coach for more than a decade. Our main topic today will focus on how to take the guesswork out of growth. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks, Amy. Glad to be here. I appreciate being given the chance to chat with you.
Bill, tell me everything.
Everything?
Everything.
Everything. Well, let's see. I think the planet started about 4 billion years ago. How far back do you want to go?
What do you do, Bill? What do you love to do?
What I love to do? So I love to work with leadership teams and help them figure out really the easiest possible way, although it's not easy at all to do, to grow their business in a healthy and thriving way. I've learned that most businesses are failing or struggling in one way, shape, or form. And I think many of the reasons that that is happening are preventable. So I'm sort of dedicating the last chapter of my professional career here to trying to help people figure that out.
Is it preventable all the time?
No, of course, there are extrinsic forces that will affect you. You know, we've had three big ones in the last 20 some odd years in 9/11, 2008, and COVID. But if you think about those things, most of the companies that, you know, really thought about the fact that these things happen, right? You're in the financial world a lot, and there's a financial correction or whatever you want to call it every, 6 to 8 years on average. If you understand that, then you should prepare that it's going to happen again. You don't know when it's going to happen. So you have to make sure your business is sound, your cash position is sound, so you can get through that. And then typically the ones that get through that are the ones that thrive, because then they grow faster as they come out of it. And those that haven't and spread themselves too thin and focus on revenue over cash generally don't have a lot of wherewithal to stick with it and either have to borrow, and that's a problem, or they go out of business.
So tell me some of you go into companies and you work with leadership teams, and you help coach them. What are some of the, when you go into a company, are there common patterns that you find and see that if you can help address them, you can make a real difference with?
Yeah, there are two things that come up often. And I think they're really related to our sort of optimism bias as human beings. And our general, I think most people are nice people. They don't like to, you know, hurt other people's feelings, et cetera. So one of them is, one of the questions that I ask, which is something that I adopted from Scaling Up, which I think is a great question that I ask of the CEO or the owner of the company, is, would you enthusiastically rehire everyone on your team now that you know who they are? Or, you know, if one of them came to you and said they were leaving, you know, would you fight really hard to keep them? And the answer is almost always, you know, no, I wouldn't enthusiastically rehire some of these folks. And so they keep this team that isn't really the right team around them. And so that will affect the business, because no matter what you do on strategy or execution, et cetera, if you don't have a good team that's supporting that, then either they're not going to help you with the strategy, or certainly not going to help you execute it as well as they possibly can. And the other thing that I've found is that most leaders believe they know why their clients buy from them, or their best clients buy from them. And I've found that often they are incorrect in that assumption, that they think they know, and that it isn't always the reasons that they think that their best customers buy from them. And then they go under a false assumption.
So let's take the second point.
Yeah.
How does someone you think you know, but you don't know, how do people go about figuring out why their customers are buying from them?
Yeah, so I'll tell you a story that I did with one of my startups. So I was with a bunch of startups from the 90s through about 2015. And I went into one of them that was a number of years old, probably 7 or 8 years old, probably. And they were in the online data backup business in 2005. So very early on. Now online data backup is just sort of normal, but at that point in time, it was not. And I said that I'd like to speak to a bunch of customers, their best customers and partners, and sort of why they have that relationship with them and what value they got from the business. But before I did, I asked the CEO and the head of marketing and the head of sales and marketing, I said, so why do you think our customers buy from us? And they said, well, if they buy us because we're an insurance play, meaning that they're willing to pay a little bit every month to make sure that if their data gets corrupted or gets destroyed in some way, shape, or form, or they lose it in some way, they'll get it back, or at least most of it back. So they're willing to pay a little bit of insurance money to do that. And I actually thought that was a decent answer because it was more about the customer than about them. Because often when I used to be a Vistage speaker, and I would ask the question, sort of, what, you know, why do people buy from you? What's the value that you give to them? And very often they would say, I sort of summed it up, because we're awesome, you know, and I would say, well, they don't really care what you do, but that they care what you do does for them. And that's what you have to sort of figure out. So I went out to about 16, 17, 18 different customers. And I asked a bunch of questions, but I think the most critical one that I asked was, what's the most valuable thing that you got from working with us over the years? And the answer I got was relatively consistent. I think 10 or 12 of them said almost the exact same words, which was set it and forget it. So we were selling insurance and they were buying time, basically. So we switched that message to them saying, you know, most of our best customers are really busy, small to business, medium business owners. They have so many things going on. They know they have to do this with their data, but it's such a pain in the neck. And, you know, they would say, you know, so I get online and I push a couple of buttons and then I never have to think about it again. You know, they were like, give me one of those. So I think we make assumptions and we don't actually ask them why, you know, what it is that we do for them. What's the value that they get from us? How we make their lives easier? How are their lives benefited from using our product or service?
Very interesting. Bill, you're in the coaching business. Oftentimes, I see people, let me ask a question. How in your mind should an entrepreneur or an owner find the best coach for them?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know that I have the answer, but I can tell you what I think is that there are a lot of really good coaches out there and they can provide you with tremendous value. But I think part of it is also, and by the way, there are a number of coaches out there that are not very good and, you know, they have great words and but they don't have any results. You know, there's not a lot of science to what they do. But the ones that are good, and I'm in a couple of different coaching organizations that we spoke about earlier before we came on, and there are a number of really talented people and really, you know, people who just, they're trying to make the lives of other people better. And they're filling themselves up with knowledge and methods and principles, et cetera. So you want to make sure that you're working with a coach that has a proven approach to things, that there's some science behind it. There's at least some history in a bigger way than their customers saying. And then the second is, I think it's got to be a good fit. I find that you become friendly or friends with your customers because, you know, if you're a good coach, at least from what I'm doing, you really get into some pretty intimate moments with the team and their lives. And so you want to look forward to seeing that person on a regular basis, not only because they're adding value, but because you enjoy their time, you know, that sort of fit works as well. So that's sort of what I think. I think you have to know that there's science behind business and hopefully you're working with a coach that understands that. There are some fundamentals around how to lead people and understand, you know, run a brain-friendly organization, really understand, you know, the essence of a job to be done or doing some customer discovery, et cetera, to make sure that your strategy is working well. And it's really good about pulling that information from the team. I've noticed in my 7 or 8 years of coaching, when I talk to folks and they say they're going to coach me, and I put up the air quotes, they then tell me what to do, which I don't consider that coaching. Coaching is typically pulling, you know, the essence of coaching is already assuming that the other person has the answers or can get them, and you're helping them find them for themselves, as opposed to giving them the answers that may or may not be correct, because they might be correct for you, but not necessarily for them.
How important is the methodology versus the coach?
So I think I'm going to throw another one in there. I don't know that the methodology is super important. There are lots of business operating systems out there. I've been studying business for a while, and I think I've found 23 or 24 different business operating systems that you could employ, from scaling up to EOS to Value Builder. You know, there are tons of these things out there. So I think what's important is understanding the principles of business. You know, what are the two or three or four major things that successful companies that endure over the long term and are successful, you know, in terms of growing in a steady way, taking care of their people as well as the process, that if your coach understands that, then they can pick the right methodology, right? So some of my clients will, you know, we sort of follow a process, but once in a while, there's something's going to come up and we have to figure out how to deal with that. So I get to the essence of what's driving that. And then I say, okay, you know, the EOS model might be a little bit better for addressing that. So we do that. Or here there's a more something along neuroscience, you know, and really understanding how to give feedback and or how to deal with working with your team members, et cetera, is something that you want to have. So I think really understanding the principles. So of course that is related to the coach. So I would, if I tie those two together, then the coach who really understands first principles of business is far more important than the methodology. He or she will then hopefully pick the method, because it's, I can't remember the saying, but it's either process or method. All methods are wrong and some are useful. I think you increase your chances of picking the right methodology if you understand the principles behind running a really great business.
Yeah, it's interesting. Oftentimes people seem to think that a particular methodology is like religion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people say, I'm looking for an EOS coach, or I'm looking for a scaling up coach, or I'm looking for a particular type of coach. And yep. Whether I'm right or wrong, my advice is slow down. It's not about the methodology. It's about the person. And it's about the chemistry. And it's about if you think that's someone you can respect and you can push you and who's walked in your shoes before. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah. So I think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, you talked about that. I didn't say chemistry, but that's sort of what I was saying. When you become friends and whatever, there's a connection that you make there. So yeah, I think you're generally right. Having to have walked in your shoes before, you know, I can argue both sides of that. You know, sometimes there's something called the curse of knowledge. And I actually like to go into some businesses where I don't really have any background in their industry at all, because then I don't have any biases coming in and saying, you know, hey, you know, you should do it this way or that way. But I think the better coaches that are the better ones generally have led a team or led an organization in the past, or one or more. That certainly helps. I think there's also that sort of compassion and empathy that comes with that, right? It's like, you know, I totally get where you're coming from. This is not easy. As opposed to someone just who hasn't done that, say, well, you know, just do this and didn't do that. You know, and they don't really understand that the methodology, when applied in practice in real life, is different based upon the context of the business, right? The team makeup, the competitive landscape, the technology that they're in, whatever it is. You know, the leader, him or herself, right? The leader of the organization has a huge impact on whether the methodology gets applied. I've had leaders who just, you know, they hire me, I find out later, to fix their team when the team isn't necessarily the problem, right? You know, the bottleneck is at the top of the bottle for a reason. And when he or she doesn't really understand that they hired the team, their job is to assemble and create these sort of individual folks who are idiosyncratic and make them to a great, well-rounded team. And that can help them. The brains that they bring into the organization have a huge impact on the overall business. If they just want to be a genius with 1,000 helpers, then no methodology is going to work, whether it's scaling up or EOS or whatever, over the long term. You know, it might work. What I really like about EOS, and I think why it's so popular, is it has great impact in the short term because it's very execution focused. The problem I have with EOS over the long term is that if you're executing on a faulty or not really thought out strategy, then eventually you're going to hit a wall. And I speak to a number of CEOs that have done EOS, and they come to me because I'm a sales and marketing guy. You know, I'll be recommended, and they'll say, you know, I love EOS. And I say, well, why are you talking to me? So, well, we, you know, we're kind of stuck. We can't get past $9 million or $25 million or whatever it is. And I said, well, that's what I found with EOS. You know, it's a great short-term thing, but if you don't really think about strategy over long-term, because strategy is an evolving thing. It happens, you know, changes on a regular basis over time. So I'm more of a, I combine methodologies with what I do and some of the stuff that I have. So I really like scaling up as a foundation. I use some execution stuff from EOS because I really like their meeting structure. I like their accountability chart and some other things that they do. And then they use a strategy thing called Three Hag and Metronomics that sits on top of that. And then I am a fan of neuroscience. So I talk a lot about how human beings are crazy. They're irrational, impulsive, highly emotional beings, and you can't assume logic is going to work. You have to sort of think about how you can create this brain-friendly organization that I talked about earlier. So that's what sort of I've come to the same conclusion you have. That's why I don't particularly choose one methodology. I find, you know, I'm not perfect either. I find the things that at least make sense to me, and I use those, and I combine some things together.
So how is the pandemic and this virtual world, or this now hybrid world, or whatever you want to call it, change the face of coaching? Do you coach locally? Do you coach nationally? Do you coach internationally? Are you coaching just the way you used to be?
So I've had a mix of things already before the pandemic. I had a client who was an international gifting company. The CEO is about 10 or 15 miles from me. So I would go over to his house, but the rest of the organization was spread around the world. So we would have, you know, screens with, you know, with like the Brady Bunch up there and lots of people. You know, there was some in Ukraine, some in France, some in other parts of the US. And we would use tools like Mural and Zoom and others to make it happen. And I still do that. When the pandemic happened, I actually lost a lot of clients. They just either paused for whatever reasons. Some of them came back, some never did. And I prefer to meet live because I like to have all the work that we've done, we generally lay out in front of us in terms of pictures that are drawn on big easel sheets and things. And I think that keeps it in front of everyone's consciousness while we're together, where online doesn't do that as much. And you can't see body language as well with and facial expressions, et cetera. But, you know, it's not where there are some deficiencies in online. There are a lot of great, you know, there are a lot of great benefits to doing it as well. So it's I don't think you lose much by being online. I also think the coaching aspect, this hybrid world of, you know, sort of how do I organize my team is something that I think is, we're going to have to somehow incorporate into coaching. There are so many different opinions and whatever, of what works, what doesn't work. I heard a guy say, you can't be hybrid. You have to be all in or all out. You know, I don't know what the right thing is there. So I think we're going to have to work on that as well as to, you know, what's the right mix depending on your business, et cetera, for that. But yes, I like the fact that I can do a good session, a really decent session online. I can do it from here. And they can all be, at their own desks or their own houses as well.
What part of the country are you in, Bill?
I'm in Massachusetts, Boston area.
Got it. Very cool. Bill, if our listeners want to learn more about you, your company, or your methodology, where do they go?
Best is probably my website, which is catalystgrowthadvisors.com. My book is there. My book is called Further Faster, which has a sort of a, talks a little bit about my approach, my mixed approach, and what I do. And there's my calendars there, my email, phone number, all that kind of stuff. So it's catalystgrowthadvisors.com.
Awesome. Bill, thanks so much for giving us some of your valuable time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ami. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today on Ami Sites with your host, Ami Kassar, the foremost SBA thought leader. Make sure you visit us at multifunding.com, where you can meet our advisory team and learn more about how we help entrepreneurs fund their future.